Out of here real quick. All right, let's see. Can I do this real fast? Big Star, of course. Dream Lover, Luke Ferrari, Press Crien, number one. Hobo Sun 5, Luke Ferrari again, Danse Organique. And those are both from the 10-CD box set, Louvre Electronique. Martina Bertoni with Notes from the End of the World, and Igor Vakovich Amenthi from Hathor. That's it for me. I got to get out of here. WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope in New York City and Rockland County at 91.9 FM and online at WFMU.org. I'll see you next week. Stay tuned for Miracle Nutrition right here on WFMU. Take it easy.
Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Gosh, I've been Hardy White for a while, haven't I? Join me now, won't you? as we have some fun together and maybe talk about some important things. It's okay to talk about feelings. Mr. Rogers made it okay, and I made it slightly weird. Oh, hello, my friends. I'm so glad to be with you. If you have come here to have your heart comforted, I think you've come to the right place. You know, the other day, the lawn man came up to me and said, "Have you seen this dang old Father Brown?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "You know, that's written by G.K. Chesterton. And he wrote a story one time about this anarchist cell where they were all undercover policemen, but they didn't know it." And I said, "Oh, that's fantastic, Father Brown." And we got to talking about that show, and I'll describe it for you because you might not have seen it. It's been on the UK television, and we can get it here if you have a special antenna. It's about a Catholic priest in the UK in the 50s in an alternate universe where there was never a Protestant Reformation, so everyone's Catholic, and so it's very important to all the townspeople. And he lives in the Cotswolds where everything is yellow because it's made of this sulfur brick. So they don't show the smell on the TV, but I don't know if that's true, but everything is yellow. The people are all different colors, which is also not true in real life. But they have this a priest named Father Brown, and he goes around solving mysteries, which is fantastic. Who doesn't also want to be a detective? And I think most clergy, they have so much time on their hands that they all do a little bit of police work. Most of the Protestant clergy I've met, though, do things like insurance fraud investigating on the side. It's just mainly just going through paperwork. So much of what the FBI does is accounting. But this Father Brown, he's doing the old-fashioned kind of detective work, where he's out there, and there's always a lieutenant, not a lieutenant, we call him inspector, chief inspector, sergeant, inspector, DC. They have, I don't know all the terms. In the British cop shows, they have different terms than we have, but they have an inspector. Now, he always arrests the wrong person. So there's a murder. Let's say it's a county fair. So the big county fair, and you go in this small town, and someone will be murdered. And the policeman will come and say, "Oh, it's probably this guy here. You're under arrest." And then they keep going with the fair. Oh, it never interrupts anything, the murder, which I think is remarkable. That's how chill they all are. So go, well, you know, people are mysteriously murdered every day, really. Who doesn't get stabbed in a small country church weekly? So then the father goes, "Something's up," you know, and he'll go and visit the wrongly accused person in the cell. And he'll say, "You didn't do it, do you?" "No, Father." So they say Father, either a rotivar or not, depending on where they're from. Say, "Oh, I didn't do it, Father." Or "I didn't do it, Father. I was throwing up cider." So like that. And isn't that a fun accent? So that sounds like a pirate. Here's an aside. That's the pirate voice because the actor who played Long John Silver, this is my understanding, which means it's wrong, in Treasure Island, use that kind of West Country accent. So it's like, "Oh, yar." Everybody thinks that's what pirates sounds like. But he could have gone another way. He was, "Oh, I'm a bit of a pirate. Hello. Want to do some pirating?" But he didn't. He went with another. And it fits. I think it fits. But it may not be accurate. It'd be fun to go back in time, see how pirates actually talked. "That's how I like this. Hello. Ah, sir, I'm a pirate." Like, it could be real. They were at sea for a long time. So who knows, you know. "Mama has swollen from off of Skurgy." So it could be. That's a voice I use for my dog when my dog's talking. "Okay." Like that. But, so I digress. That's really all I do. But I always get back. If I tell you, if I go off on a tangent, which is like a branch, I have to come back because branches end, don't they? And I cling to the trunk of a consistent story. So let's go back and get on the main branch again. So Father Brown speaks to these people, say, "Well, I'm going to do my best to to get you off. And they say, I beg your pardon? He goes, I'm to exonerate you. Okay, that is better. That is a better expression. And so he sets out to start investigating. Now, this is a Father Brown's wonderfully clever and a pickpocket and a lockpick and all sorts of things. And he's always breaking and entering, which I think is fantastic. I like when the church doesn't even pretend anymore and say, yes, yes, we break into your home frequently, just looking for clues. And so he does that, and then he'll, and usually has either his housekeeper or the church secretary, and they go with him. And it really is, it's a little like Doctor Who, except that he doesn't really travel through, he's stuck in 55 or something like that. That could be. I'd love to see a Doctor Who spinoff where go, well, the TARDIS is broken again. I guess we're just hanging around here. And it would save a lot of money, I think. So he goes off and he looks for these clues that the Father Brown does. And eventually, he will find the person who did it. He'll figure it out by kind of watching and stealing things and reading their diary and everything. And then I can't really break the confession vow, you know. So if you tell something to a priest, it's got to stay private, and apparently. And I'm not sure if that's true, but I'm sure they can tell their friends. Oh, my God. Little pamphlets are like, things I heard in the confessional this week. You're not going to believe it. But he doesn't normally. He'll say to them, he'll sit down with the accused, and he'll say, I know that you've done it. I would love to see the Andy Griffith Show do that. Say, hey, oh, Floyd, I know that you did it. Admit it. And Floyd will go, oh, Andy, oh, I did. I murdered him. Oh, I'm so sorry. I would say, I'll never do it again. I won't do that again. And say, well, no, that's not quite good enough, Floyd, because you murdered him. It was really easy to tell because it was done with a straight razor with a shaky hand. Oh, yes. Oh, I had a bit of a stroke, you know. So I was sitting. I had to kind of lean over here so I can cut your throat. Oh, and he did. So be like that and go, well, that Floyd, that's unacceptable. I'm going to be back to Father Brown now. You say, whatever, that's not good. And he will say to them, what you have to do is confess and repent. So today I would like to talk about the concept of confessing and repenting, but not necessarily in a religious way. Oh, my goodness. I don't want to confess anything to another human. That seems dangerous. And I'm certainly not going to go into a little phone booth and say, hey, you over there. With the, odd profession and the interesting hat. Father Brown, again, this is just an aside, wears a really interesting type of clerical hat. First of all, he wears a black robe that clings much too tightly to his wonderful middle-aged man physique, which I kind of almost share, that lovely shape. It's not quite Alfred Hitchcock, but it's like, oh my goodness, you're eating a lot of sweets and probably hitting that communion wine a little bit. And so, but he's got this hat, and it's I think it's called a Saturn something hat because it looks like Saturn. You know, it's got a dome on top and then a big visor. So it's almost like a kippa, but with a dome. And you can get them in all sorts of things, probably from straw to ermine, which is the hat, wonderful hat shop name. Go ahead, take it. Then is okay. So that's a kind of confessing that the church does, and say, you got to tell this individual, and then he tells God later. So I'm gonna say I will get to it, and then it's like the post office. Can I have a tracking number? What? Can I have a tracking number for my confession? Because I don't know how long you're gonna sit on it before it gets to God. So I'd like to be able to see, like a kind of informed delivery, whether it's going to make it or not. Just trust me. So what I'm saying is that's not the kind of confessing that I'll be speaking about today. And the repenting is not necessarily the religious kind either. It doesn't necessarily mean, well, now you got to go to church more. All right. And after that, you're going to have to pray so much that your hands will get chapped. You're praying. Don't pray too tightly. A lot of people do that and they'll collapse because they'll cut off the circulation. Then you're pressing your hands too tightly. And if you interlock your fingers like that, that could do a lot of damage. Now, a lot of evangelicals just hold their hands up with their palms up high and do that. But if your shoulder have any kind of shoulder pain, that's rough too. So try to find a prayer posture that suits you and say, well, I don't really pray. Well, I'm not telling you to pray to anything or anyone. We'll get to that. Oh my goodness. You shouldn't be deprived of a wonderful human ritual just because it's based on baloney. You should be able to do these things to heal your heart in all sorts of wonderful ways. And kind of putting your hands together is I've done that many times. Like saying thank you for something and say, oh, thank you, thank you. And you might press your hands together like that and make the sort of like thank you supplication thing. Or I like to sort of like, I'm doing that with my hands. Yep, that's my hands. And a lot of people can make music. I worked with a fella that could actually make different pitches and stuff with his hands. Like, oh, what kind of pastor are you? I'm the world's worst. I've been called to say, oh, you're a type of a pastor, Hardy, and that you want to heal hearts and be there to help people. But also, you're moderately incompetent. And I know, oh my goodness. So there used to be an underground tape called Pastor Gas. And it was Robert, the evangelical preacher, charismatic preacher, Robert Tilton, who was on TV, used to be on TV, speaking in tongues a lot. And you know what doesn't have that? Duolingo. I would love it if Duolingo had speaking in tongues. You know, the word, Satakalan Sadadanapaka. So, okay, oh my gosh, I forget what that means. It means you need to build a new rec center in the church. So I'm not that. I'm not Pastor Gas. And what that was is, I forgot to tell you. So they took the Robert Tilton doing this, and somebody edited in poot sounds, gas sounds, like that. And you go, oh, hallelujah. And it was hilarious, depending on how much pot you had smoked. So, but I'm not Pastor Gas. Oh my goodness. I'm more like Pastor Mild Cramps or something like that. Pastor Cramps. I mean, it's not a pun, but it's accurate. No, I mean to help. I want to help. And like all that fiber you ate, you thought it was helpful, but like, what is, low key crampy. So I want to do that. So I'm making these comparisons to Father Brown. Oh my gosh, I would never compare myself to Father Brown. But if I was any television detective, why not? He's as good as any. So, but I want to get to this confess and repent thing because I think it's very important. And so today's sermon, if I was giving sermons, I would make sure that they all had something practical in them, because it's one thing to say, you know, this is how you heal your heart. This is a good argument for love or kindness. And also, here's how to get stains, stubborn stains out of things. And this really works, that kind of thing. Or, you know, do you know there's so many uses for baking soda? Oh, what are some of them? Baking, sodifying. I can't even, the list is too long, but you could look that up. That's not the kind of sermon I'm doing today, but there should be. If you're in a church or house of worship and the Midrash does not include a recipe for like matzah brei or something, then you need to do something about that and get out there and say, please, little something practical. I love all the airy fairy hairy Larry, Harry and Larry stuff, but I really would love something that I can use. So I hope that even though I'm going to be talking about matters of the heart, that in a way, they're practical. Because I'm not asking you to believe anything I believe or join anything or buy anything. Oh, my goodness. I'm not even asking that you do what I say. I'm just going to describe something. And if that's something that appeals to you, you can run with it, right? And here it is. A lot of times, we behave in ways that we regret. We might do things when it really hurts somebody, and the more we sort of do a thing, regret, the more regret we have, the worse the consequences can be for our heart over the long term. And I think most of us, it might be anger. You know, you get very, very angry, and you might say something hurtful that you very much regret. And a lot of times, we might say that to someone we love. Say, oh, you know, you're this, that, or the other thing. That's not very specific. You know, yeah, well, you failed college. And someone's like, oh, that really hurts. You're dumb or something. And maybe we don't really mean it. We're just hurt, so we want to hurt. You know how that is. Hurt people, hurt people, hurt people, hurt people, hurt people, hurt people, hurt people. It just keeps going on. So how do we break that chain? And we've done something. Now, a lot of times we think, oh, I'm awful. I hate myself for this. You might say, I deserve the worst. I don't deserve love. I hate myself for doing that. Look how awful. Now, that is really the wrong path. Don't go down that one. It is impractical. There's no exit for that. That's just a long off-ramp into hell, and it's unnecessary. So what I'm recommending is a sort of confess and repent, but all rolled up in one. And there's a great Hebrew word for it called teshuva, which means return. You mean like Twin Peaks, the teshuva? Or the Alain René movie, Muriel, A Time of Teshuvah? No, well, they use the word return. And it is sort of the same thing, and I'll describe it in a minute. I hope I can use David Lynch examples. I pray right now, just pray before I speak, that there's a lot of those come to me. That would be wonderful. But I'm going to explain what I mean first by confess. Confess. Tell me. Now, I'm dubious about confessing anything to humans because, you know, I have trust issues with anything that breathes. It doesn't mean that I don't trust. It just means that, gosh, you know, I understand how flawed we are. But I am very much against lying to oneself. And a lot of times we will do that. We will lie to ourselves, either not admit that we did a thing as a way of avoiding the guilt, or we will lie to ourselves about, we'll overreact, and we'll say, I'm going to punish myself. But punishing doesn't fix anything, and it doesn't fix you, and it's not going to heal your heart or others. And so we must be honest with ourselves. Say, I was just a doo-doo head. And everybody's capable of being it. I just did something I regret. I have done something that I don't want to do again. And I want to be able to heal it and make it right. Well, that is step one. And you can't get to step two without that one. So even though you might not ever be able to fix the thing or fix yourself, you must get off on that ramp. Because that one goes out, has lots of traffic lights and a Stuckey's and a Buc-ee's. I guess there's more Buc-ee's than Stuckey's now. Gosh, I went to a Buc-ee's for the first time. And they have, this is so crazy, but they have an infinite number of gas pumps. I know that almost doesn't seem possible. It's a little bit Hilbert Hotel kind of thing, right? And where there's just an infinite number. If you keep going to the end, they just keep making more. So it's always just disappears into the distance. And the ones at the end are all sorts of gas that doesn't have gas in it or that kind of thing. It's all wonderful. There's one that's just made out of shrimp. I don't even know how that works. But if your car runs on liquid shrimp, that's neat. That's really cool. Is it good for the environment? I don't know, man. I have a little reef. There's a coral reef in the back. And the little shrimp, they fly, go into a tube voluntarily, and then become energy. Well, that's very interesting. And I think that's how it works. So when you want to fix a thing, you must acknowledge it. So on that off-ramp, that's how I got there. So I'm going back up. Then I got to walk back up the darn off-ramp to get back on the highway of cogent thinking. So when we have to initially acknowledge the thing, doesn't mean forgiving yourself or anything. Just put that off the table. Just acknowledge the thing is first. Now that's the confess. I did this thing. Now the repent, that's the fixing. That's the returning. Say, I want to get back to the person I was before that garbage came out of my mouth. How do I do that? Well, that's a process. You know, that one may be a little bit harder, but that's the turning. And so say, oh, I have done a thing, and now I need to fix a thing. And maybe the first thing is an apology, saying, I'm sorry I did this thing. And they say, I don't forgive you. Say, all right, I apologize again. I don't forgive you. All right, I apologize a third time. I don't forgive you. Ding! And you get a little gold star pops up over your head because you've done everything you can possibly do. You can't force forgiveness, and you're not going to. But what you're trying to do is make sure that you know that you are doing everything you can. So I want to fix this in myself. I want to, and such repent is that we've ruined a lot of words. And the human's tendency for hypocrisy, for abusing power. It's really hard to have some control or influence over other people's lives and have it not go to your head. It's almost impossible. I wouldn't know because I've never been in that position. I've never been anybody's boss, and I've never been authority over anybody but children, and I've never approached it as, oh, I'm the boss of these children. I always think like, oh, I'm just another child who got here first, and so I must guide these newbies because, look, they're doing all sorts of newbie dumb stuff that I did. And so I will guide them with patience and love. But am I going to do it imperfectly? I was loved and cared for imperfectly as a child. And part of me fixated on the imperfect part for a long time. But then I realized I was demonstrating love and affection and caring in my life because I was taught it. And so it was in there saying, I'm going to nurture this part of myself. And I'm going to be kind. I do want to say that I don't believe there's any kind of transforming into a permanent state. I think this is a constant thing you do until you drop dead. And when you drop dead, you might be right in the middle of returning. You might be right in the middle of confessing or making something right, and yet so be it. But what you haven't done is you haven't dug a deep, dark hole of despair for yourself. You're saying, hey, I'm actively always keeping this heart up. The heart is like a garden. The heart is like a house. My house is falling apart. It's very hard to keep up with it. And so is my body. But I keep trying to be healthy and I keep trying to repair the house, knowing that ultimately they both will fall apart. I do this with my garden, knowing that the flowers I tend will eventually wither and die. But this is the way. But if I don't tend them, they will never blossom. They will never provide that temporary beauty, that awesome wonder that color and light provides us, that the idea of growth, and you know, maybe it's the impermanency not foreverness. That is the beauty. You know, I would say in Japanese aesthetics, that's the thing, isn't it? There's the mono no aware, you know, which is the temporary nature, the ephemeral nature of things. That's the sort of a sad beauty, and sort of a beauty in brokenness or wornness or oldness. Say, look at that old man's face. Look at that. It's like a map. It is like a map of like the moon or New York. They're very different places. Yeah, but New York has a lot of deep wrinkles that you get from smoking. That's probably true. And those, though, give character. And there's a certain beauty in that, as there is a beauty in something that is brand new and has its whole life ahead of it. And so we turn our hearts and try to be, I'm going to try to fix things. And here I am, Hardy White, a goofball, Pastor Cramps, that wants to hold your hand and help you from lying to yourself or hurting yourself to say, come on, that's not helpful. Let's just do something about it. And you will always feel better, even if you're in the middle of doing something. I was just getting into shape when I dropped dead. Well, that's fine. That's fine, you know, because at least you weren't sitting there saying, what am I going to do? There's always something to do. Is it ultimately futile? It is. But, oh my goodness, you can be a connoisseur of futility. And you can say, even though these things are impermanent, you know, it really is the gardening I enjoy. Because when I'm sitting there just watching the garden, it's like, ugh! I have a long line of people in my family can't not weed. You know, if there's a garden, they can't just sit there and enjoy it. They have to go, I got to pull some weeds. So they're always interacting and putting their hands in the soil and everything. That is the enjoyment. There is sort of no just glaring at a thing and saying, oh, I'm so satisfied. There's a satisfaction in the doing. And there's a satisfaction in the turning. Oh, my goodness. So Father Brown says you must confess and repent. And I say, and Hardy go in there and go, man, you got to tell somebody. You got to tell yourself. Admit it to yourself. And then, you know, fix it. And sometimes fixing it means facing the consequences. Because consequences often cannot be avoided. There's a lot of times you're not going to outwit karma. So consequences are going to happen because one thing leads to another. But there's certain worse things than consequences. You know, and that's when your heart is in a deep, dark cell. And what I'm saying is there's a way to power through the consequences without that, you know, it being as punishing as it possibly could be. Oh, my goodness. We should think before we do things. That's another good way to do that. I'm not big on that. I don't have a lot of rules of how to avoid things. I wish that'd be more practical. I'm more the person you come to is like, I messed up, Hardy. Oh, I wish I could have helped you before you messed up, but that I'm not so good at. Because I'm good at making mistakes and then trying to fix them. But I'm not so good at avoiding them always. And I'm not sure that you should. I'm not saying being reckless, but oh my gosh, if you're out there feeling things and doing things, then stuff's going to, you know, get broken. You can't have, let's say you have a beloved thing, like a coffee mug. I love my coffee mug that says Pool's Barbecue, Georgia. Yes, has piggies on it. Yes, I don't eat them, but I like the mug. Okay, and then it broke. It broke. Oh, no. It broke because you used it. But see, that's okay. You're using it. If you just had it sitting there in a glass case with my Spock. What? I have Spock in a glass case. I know you should be playing with Spock. Take that Spock figurine out of that box. It won't be worth anything. It's not worth anything now. What's it worth? Take the Spock out of the box and have it go talk to Ken or one of the other figurines. What other figurines do you have? I have Shemp. Okay, Shemp and Spock. And they would have a lot to talk about, I think. And, you know, Shemp would go, and then Spock would go, fascinating, like that. And it is fascinating. But now you're not going to get that. You're not going to get your idea for Shemp and Spock Go to Miami, an award-winning screenplay starring important stars, because you didn't play with those little figurines. You had them locked away. Everything was so precious. You weren't using them. All of us remember going to an old elderly aunt's house when we were young and seeing all the furniture covered with plastic. And then on top, she'd go, don't sit on that. I go, but it's covered with plastic. I mean, that's really redundant. So we can't sit on it, and it's covered with plastic. Where would you have us sit? Nowhere. Leave. I don't know if they were that bad. But, you know, this trying to preserve thing, furniture of all things, you know, preserve for whom? Eventually, and it was me, because I inherited a couch like that, I took the damn plastic off, and I got my greasy thighs all over it, and all my hands, my dirty hands, and the dog chewed on it, and the cat clawed at it, and children peed on it, and everything. And maybe I peed on it, I don't know, I don't remember. But it was eventually say, oh boy, that couch is in rough shape, because it was lived on like it was intended to. There's no museum in the world, except for the Louvre, that has a couch on display. Really? Yeah, well, I mean, it has to be a king's couch. And, but if it's not, if it didn't belong to a queen or something, it just belonged to Aunt Sarah, it's got to be used and loved. Oh my gosh, I had a dream the other day that somebody, I was telling somebody about my show, and I said, you know, I'd love when people just use clips from it. You can take it. It's just, I feel like all the listeners and we all, it's all ours. It belongs to all of us in a way. You know, I can't, won't, and shouldn't, and cash in on anything. You know, this is just stuff we own, and it's for people who self-select, because this, your listeners right now, self-select for patience, for imagination, for open-mindedness, for an understanding that the most precious things are found in a rare situation, that we said, like fishing. I think a lot of you maybe fish or do the equivalent, maybe bird watch, where you sit for a long time and then you catch a glimpse of something wonderful. And my show's been described that way. It's like 1 hour, you get like there's going to be 3 minutes of gold. But that's the same way as literal gold. Literal gold is in mud, you know? And so you've got to pan through it. But if I was to just give you something entirely made of gold, like a gold toilet on gold walls or gold everywhere, gold loses its value. And now you go, ugh, it's awful. I'm encased in gold. I don't want that. I want to see a little glimmer. I want to sparkle. I want to find the jewel. I don't want everything just made of jewels. How cold, how sterile. You know, I want to find the wonderfulness. And so that's what we're doing here, right? And so in this dream, I said, I have this show and I like people to take something. And this person was kind of testy and they went, I don't need the clout. I go, no, I can't give you any clout. I'm not giving you any. No one will know. No one knows me. You know, I just want to, if you need some raw material or something, I'm just saying you're welcome to cut up my painting and use the nose for something. Like in Magic Christian, they just, Ringo cut the nose out of a painting. And it made everybody mad. But like, if that's the part that you like the best, take that with you. And then I woke up and, Hugh, my friend, you're listening right now. I know you are in Australia. He made a great, took my one of my goofy pseudo avant-garde songs and put a wonderful beat to it. I should I'll ask him if I can play it for you sometime. And it was like my dream came true. And just that connection with others is so important to me. And when you're listening to this, I really hope that you feel that other people listening to it too, that you're in a group, that it is like a church without symbols, without any creed or any belief systems. It's just a way to get together absolutely in a pure way and just around one principle, one value, and that is kindness and love. Is that two things? I don't know. They might come together. I'm not so sure. But kindness and love. And they say, oh, kindness, it doesn't cost anything. Oh, yes, it does. Of course it does. It often does. But that doesn't matter. Everything costs something, you know? But what's important is that you get a good trade out of it. You know, if it's going to cost something, let it cost something that's worth it. And you know the difference between if you have not everybody's blessed with a conscience. And I say blessed with because we do understand now that there might be something in your brain. There's such a thing as psychopaths. And say, I just can't feel what you're feeling necessarily. And it doesn't make you necessarily evil. You must then reason out. You know, you don't have a shortcut, I guess. Also, I don't know what I'm saying. So I just love to let you know that because a lot of things, I say them with confidence. And since there's no visuals, normally I'd flash something on a screen saying, Hardy is extremely uninformed and is not really good at reasoning. However, doesn't mean that occasionally something isn't going to drop out of his mouth that's true, you know? Do I make mistakes? Yes. This happened. This is still haunting me, but these folks pulled up. I was taking a walk. Actually, I think I was cleaning the neighborhood. I had my little pinchers and I was picking up garbage. And they stopped and they said, directions to where's the Baptist hospital? They were looking for Central Baptist. And I gave them directions to the Catholic hospital. Perfect directions. And then they pulled off. And I thought, wait, no. It was too late. And that was not my, I don't really, it's still haunting me. But I didn't really do anything wrong except be confused and dumb. And you know, when somebody asks you something that you're not really thinking about, it's hard. But that's something I had to sort of get over, forgive myself. And I've done much worse. But that's one that, I don't know. Scream at somebody or something. Ugh, God, I cringe, but I've tried to do something about it and find ways of not behaving like that. And the older I get, I get more amused with my mistakes now than I used to when I was young. Now I think, oh, this is hilarious because if something happens multiple times, it's farcical. And so if you're doing it right, your life should seem increasingly farcical. Say, this is really, really silly. I guess when I was young, I thought, you know, sort of go somewhere. There's some kind of progress to it. I didn't think it would be as chaotic as it is. And I didn't think I would change as much as I have. Because even though I remain basically the same person I was when I was a laughy little child, I was told I was an incredibly, I laughed a lot, really, as a little baby kid. Like, I was really smiley. I thought everything was hilarious. So I had a certain charm into a certain age. And then it just turned. And I wasn't that anymore. And I was the type of kid that other kids didn't necessarily like. Kind of nerdy or goofy or heavy. And, I couldn't do sports real well. I didn't like certain thing. I was kind of raised by old people, so I didn't know anything modern. I couldn't relate, really. And so I was teased a lot and everything. And I had friends, but I didn't realize until later that a lot of my friends when I was younger didn't actually like me. I would hang out in groups, but And it wears down on you. And so because of that, I think a lot of, I did a lot of things that maybe were misguided, because I thought, well, maybe I'm not, you know, lovable and everything, but I had been loved, and I was, so my mom can't be totally wrong. My grandparents can't be, you know, that wrong. I must have something. And I was right. And I do. And now I love myself more like that, but I don't think I'm, I don't even use the word perfect. I think people use that as, I say, well, no one's perfect. And go, yeah, that, they're not even close. You know, no one's like adequate, much less perfect. No one's even good enough, really. You know, so forget this perfect thing. Well, I'm not perfect. No, no, you're also not, you know, a purple alien. So that's an absurd thing. I don't even know what it means. And you could be a perfect killer or something. So yeah, let's take that off the, you know, I think what makes a person able to navigate this world is a sense of absurdity, a forgiving heart, a propensity for kindness, someone who enjoys love and kindness and nurturing. And I think it's possible. Then you can, because we even, gosh, who doesn't like a friend? You, as you know, I've been watching this Golden Girls. Now, I'm not watching because I enjoy it. I'm watching because I'm writing a book. No, that's not true either. But it's not nostalgia for me, because I was not watching the Golden Girls in the early 80s. I was watching, you know, the young ones. Because that's, I thought, and they're older than me, which is hilarious. So even they were kind of my Golden Girls. Like, look at these old timers. They were roughly my age, though. So I was watching that, and that's not really appreciably different than the Golden Girls. I've watched some Golden Girls episodes that are incredibly shark jumpy, and they might as well have like talking food in the refrigerator, because it's about that, almost that. And then one episode they had Bob Hope, which is the opposite of Alexi Sale. I think that's fair. So if you'd never thought about it in those terms, gosh, this book, I got to get this book out. I wish I could write a thing. I can write little skits and stuff. I can, if I turn it into a sitcom episode, I could write it. I learned to write those a long time ago because I thought, well, this is a literary form. And even if I'm not going to get any produced, I need to write in the literary form of the sitcom. And so there you have it. But this Golden Girls, what they emphasize all the time, besides cheesecake, which they eat with impunity, there's no, none of them develop any ill effects from the amount of cheesecake they eat in the middle of the night, which I do not advise. That's just the worst, worst, worst thing. If it were on now, they'd be like, oh, what are you doing, Rose? It's, oh, I'm intermittently fasting. And, oh, okay. That's good. So, but what the theme is, mostly, is friendship. And you can tell that because of the theme song, which I've recited as a poem before, which is, thank you for being a friend. Traveled down the road and back again. Don't know what that means. Your heart is true. You're a pal and a confidant. And if you threw a party and invited everyone you knew, you'd say the biggest gift would be from me. And the card attached would say, thank you for being a friend. Now, that's a little braggadocio. So you don't have to. The biggest gift is the friendship. So the person writing the song got it a little screwy, I think. But essentially, it's about friendship and dated Dade County references, which is lovely. If you've ever been and spent any time in South Florida in the 70s and 80s, it can be an exciting show. Because a lot of times they'll like drop, oh, I just came from Jordan Marsh. And you go, oh, so did my Grammy. And I just came from Burdines. The Pompano Fashion Center, those were the anchor stores, whereas Burdines and Jordan Marsh. And then I moved to Tallahassee, and there was a small drugstore called Burdine's. And I was like, Burdine's? And they go, it's Burdine's. Go, and it's a drugstore? This is not where you, this is, everything is different now. And it was, it's absurdo. And you'll, when you move, you go, everything is different. But some things remain the same. And you make different friends, but you still need friendships. And they're important, and they're not as easy as they make it on TV. It's hard to get friends. And the older you get, it's the harder it is. And the way that they're friends on Golden Girls is not realistic. Because you just, I needed roommates in my South Florida home, my home in Miami. I needed roommates. And I live in Meyer Lansky's old house, which is still there, I think. I've looked up Meyer Lansky, you know, the gangster. I think he lived down there. And he lived in the Golden Girls house. I'm spreading that rumor. So Blanche, everyone's least favorite character, she owns the house, and then she's, I need roommates. And she gets Maude and Betty White and Estelle Getty with old person makeup on. They got the person that did Dustin Hoffman's makeup in that movie where he's supposed to be 100 years old. And that person came in and said, I can do this. You know, I'm gonna turn a 60-year-old Jewish lady into an 80-year-old Italian. And then they did that for Nancy Walker, was on a guest as the sister, and they did that to her too. I guess, gosh, there was a dearth of Italian actors, Italian-American actors back then? I don't think so, but it's so strange. So, all the premise is really weird that they're all friends, but it is very touching that it is about friendship. So how do you make friends when you get old? Hardy, I can't make friends. I live in a big city. I'm so isolated. You read about this all the time. Say, where do you go? I could go maybe to somebody. I'll go to a jazz show. You go to a jazz show alone, and then you come home alone. Because what are you supposed to do? Turn to the person next to you, go, so, you like jazz? It's pretty good jazz. And they, I mean, I don't know if they're going to be friendly. I guess there's places you can go where they'd be, you know, amenable to that. But it seems to me that it is very difficult. And the older you get, you know, you're not pretty. And a lot, I found that out. I was like, oh gosh, I find that. When I was younger, was it because I looked better? And I think it was. You're just a little bit popular because, you know, and as you get old, it's someone's going to have to get past this, my old madness, to be friends. But, you know, friendships build, too, over time. And if you just stay connected in people's lives and you keep showing up for them and you keep thinking of them, then you can develop friendships. I've tried to with the radio show. If I hear from people, I'll try to maybe keep in touch. And but I find that if people are my age and I try to do that, I have a very difficult time getting them to interact. Say, can we talk on the phone sometime? Oh, yeah, sometime. So it's really good that I have a radio show because you can come and you can be my friend without me knowing it. But I know you're there. I know you're there. I can't see you, but I can sense you. And if you're still here, then I'm saying something that must be resonating with you. It must be something I needed to hear that, Hardy. I needed to hear that sort of like making up for something you did is difficult, does take time. That the first step, so the word I gave you, teshuva, that means repent and confess, all rolled up into one. Basically, it means acknowledge that you've done a thing and then set out to return to your better self, you know, and do what it takes. So it's a process of acknowledging the problem and then coming up with some kind of solution. And will it be completely solved? No. Oh, it's if Father Brown episodes ended without really knowing who did it. you know? So it's not perfectly satisfying, but you have to look. You can't not look. You can't not try to find the evidence that exonerates that individual that's in there, because the inspector is really incredibly bad at his job and short-sighted and just keeps arresting people willy-nilly without any evidence. And that's pretty true to life. And then the not true to life part is that the priest solves it all. But it is fiction, and it's meant to be. And I always think that these shows, they really lack, they should have one animated character. So every show, whether it's a comedy or a mystery or anything, there should be a requirement. Have one of the characters is animated. You know, like when, Donald O'Connor or one of them dancing with a mouse? No, it was the other one. It was Gene. Yes, Gene. So always one little animated character, and then you realize, this really isn't, it isn't real, but it's true. You know what I mean? There's a difference. Things can ring true. They can be poetically true without being literally true. Just like my whole show is like that, I believe, is that I'm sort of pretending to give advice, but then there's some real advice in there. And it's worth taking. And I realize that just by being experienced, just by making it this far in my life, I do have something to offer. I do have something to share. It is very tempting to want to come on. I've been on the radio a long time. To want to come on and be like, boom, really entertaining all the time. Boom, 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 boom. With sitcoms, I don't know if you've ever written one, but there's so many jokes per minute. You know, you've got to say, dot, da, dot, da, dot, da, laugh, dot, da, dot, da, dot, da, dot, da, laugh, dot, da, laugh, dot, da, dot, da, dot, da, dot, da, laugh. There's a rhythm to it, but the laughs have to keep coming. And there's really no room for, unless it's one of those preachy sitcoms, on a very special Facts of Life. You know, we're not funny. The script wasn't funny this week, so we had a child die. That's what they used to do, you know. Difference on a very special Different Strokes. Nancy Reagan gives drugs to one of the kids. So I'm conflating two episodes, but that would happen back then. It's on a very preachy episode, and then it would be, you know, oh my gosh, it's both sad and poignant. It's really hard to do the silly and poignant thing. A lot of people try. It's the sweet and sour of comedy writing. So I'm going to make it funny and silly, but also, you know, poignant. And there's going to be some real heartfelt. More often than not, it's going to be like, it's going to be too sweet or too sour, and somebody's going to spit it out. But I do want to be consistently, you know, entertaining. But then I realize, oh my gosh, my voice is on the radio. And even though I'm not an expert at this, and even though I have no qualifications for comforting hearts, I really feel compelled to do it. I feel like I have to, even if I make a fool of myself, because what if there's one person that needs that comfort? And I know that the power of radio has that. You might be lonely, and I might not be a real friend of the best thing, and it might be just be a disembodied voice, but you know what I'm saying is true, that I do know you're out there if you're lonely, and I care, and other people care, and you can't always find them. They might not always find you, but you have to know that that caring is there, the kindness is there, it's not dead, but love is there. And people are loving powerfully. So I'm not getting any. Yeah, but we don't always get it all the time, and even don't get it when we need it. That's the time that you got to be able to give it to yourself and say, I know that just the existence of love is enough. I need it, right? So maybe love is soup, and you say, I could have this soup with somebody, or I could have this soup alone, but I'm glad there's soup. and it is warming, and it is nourishing, and it is sustaining. So I want to just let you know that love is not dead, that kindness is not dead, that justice is not dead, that all these things, that there are those of us who yearn to return to our better selves, who err and must embarrassingly and humiliatingly admit our flaws and our mistake, and humbly beg forgiveness from ourselves. And there, you know, and I'm not going to say it always in a poetic, articulate way, but it needs to be said, I think, because I don't want to go to my grave thinking, you know, Hardy, you could have helped, and you're on there, you know, making a fart joke, which is also helpful. So some of you are going to go, I'm going to find this Pastor Gas thing. Watch it with Heavy Metal Parking Lot I had them on the same tape. So I was, oh, that was great. Now, it's still funny. So all these underground tapes, now it's all on the internet. It's no fun. It used to be fun when just somebody would come over with a tape and go, what is this? What do you got? Cassettes, too. I don't mean to be nostalgic, but bring over a cassette, you know, and it'd be like Buddy Rich going, no beards. What is this, the House of David? Like that, you know? So there's that. And what else was on there? Now that you can get all this stuff, I have a quote some for some old timers. So there's Buddy Rich. There's Orson Welles. If you can show me how this is grammatically correct, sir, I will. There's that. And there's Colonel Sanders. As the Christmas was that the preacher going, oh, I see you down there. I don't want to be your preacher anymore. That was a famous one. And they're all, that was a wonderful way of surprising way of stumbling upon something great. And that's what I kind of want to be, the modern version of that. So I was driving through New York City, or I was speeding away from New Jersey. And I heard this voice on the radio, and he said some things that I laughed, but then my heart felt lighter, and I felt encouraged, and I felt optimistic, and I felt like I wanted to embrace kindness, and that there was something bigger and mysterious and wonderful, and that I do now remember being loved and cared for. And it wasn't all the time, but that time that I was is precious, and I will hold on to that, and I will try, like, treat it like a seed and see if I can get it to sprout and bear fruit. And that's what I'm trying to do here, is to bear fruit, kind of. Oh, my goodness. I can't believe we reached the end of the show. And without I always hated the word skit. I think it started in Cub Scouts where they go, oh, did you have your skit ready? And I was like, oh, I hate skits. So I can't use the word skit. I can't use the word riff. It's just like, you know, some people don't like cilantro. It tastes funny to them. The word riffing. Oh, you're riffing. That word tastes like soap. So that and skit and everything like that. So it doesn't mean that's not what I'm doing. It just means that I find it distasteful. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition on WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York, and online at WFMU.org worldwide. Oh, my goodness. I'm so glad to be with you. And friends, you're such a blessing to me. Now go out and be a blessing to others, if you want. I mean, you don't have to. You can do whatever you want. Maybe you need some time to just recover. And if that's true, then so be it. Is the show short? Then maybe the show's a little short. But I like to bring it right up on time, because I want Scott to like me.
name was Ebony. Her name was Mahogany. Twins' 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 name was Ebony.
I just need to know, baby.